Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
Hey, he's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
What's up, Steeler Nation? Welcome to another edition of The Standard is the Standard, the Behind the Steel Curtain podcast. I'm Jeff Hartman, editor of BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, and joined with me always out on the West Coast, Bay Area, Lance Williams. What's up, Lance? How's it going tonight?
What's up, Jeff? How are you doing? Just feeling blessed being able to do this podcast with you and talk about the Pittsburgh Steelers. But before I jump into my comments, I want to do two things. I want to give a big shout-out to all the veterans out there. Happy Veterans Day. And also, I want to dedicate this show to a friend of mine who passed last week, Derek Ibrahim Musa Gilbert, a.k.a. D-Knowledge. We'll always remember you, baby. One love.
Yes. Didn't know about your friend. Sorry to hear about that. And all the veterans out there that might be listening, whether it's live or whether it's podcast form, trust me, your service does not go unnoticed. We thank you very much. It makes talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers, which is just a sport, it's just a team, although it might feel like more than that to a lot of us, it puts things in perspective. And for that, wherever you serve, if you're serving now, if you're overseas, or if you're here at home, we thank you very much. That's very appropriate, Lance. It's tough to, after you say stuff like that, to go right into football talk, but that's what we're here to do. That's what we do for an hour every Wednesday night. And let's recap the Raiders game before we get on to the Browns. There's plenty to talk about. I got to be honest with you, man. This was a very strange game for me. From the way that it played out to the give and take, the back and forth, the lead changes, the blown leads and the stakes. I mean, it had everything. Can you remember a game in the recent history that it was that, I want to say it was like flukish, like it was just strange. Like, can you remember any game that remind you? Or maybe, hey, maybe you just thought that was just a high-scoring game. What did you think?
Well, I felt it was strange because if you guys don't know, me and Jeff, we always text and talk during the week before we do the show. During games, we're always texting each other. Man, I went on an emoji spaz fest. I was just sending emojis, going through a well of emotions. Oh, no, what's going on? I can't believe it. I'm screaming in a Wendy's. Listeners, I'm watching a game in Sacramento at my daughter's soccer tournament. In between games, it's pouring down rain. I'm watching a 60-inch screen in a Wendy's eating chili and a baked potato, screaming at the screen because I could not believe how bad they played after they took the 28-14 game. It was a really weird game, really inconsistent, in a lot of different areas, in a lot of different ways, but they got the dub. And what do I always say, Jeff? It's better to win and correct than lose and reflect. And that's what I thought this game was, largely for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, and to kind of chime in on giving listeners out there a little glimpse of what, you know, like you said, we do text a lot, obviously, leading up to the game, during the game. It was so bad. The listeners, like, the emoji spree that he went on was so bad, I literally had to tell him to stop because I couldn't focus on my work. I'm trying to write the game recap. Ben Roethlisberger goes down with an injury. I got to write that article. I mean, people have to realize, as the editor of the website, I basically watch the game with a laptop open and I'm typing almost the entire game as it goes on. It was that kind of game, though. It was that game where you wanted to grab your phone and just go nuts on talking with anybody about what exactly is going on and why is really no one on offense other than Antonio Brown and D'Angelo Williams doing anything. Why can't the defense really step up and make anything that resembles consistency on a regular basis? They made some splash plays. If you were to say, Lance, this is a question for you. If I were to take away D'Angelo Williams and Antonio Brown and even Ben Roethlisberger's statistics, okay, and say, give me some positives to take away from this game, and obviously the win is the most important thing. We understand that. We've already gotten that on the table. What's the most important thing? Who might get your game ball? You know, stuff like that. Take those three players, that trio's out of the picture. What do you think?
I got to definitely go with Roosevelt Nix. His hitting special teams was huge, and he was laying wood the whole entire game. So Roosevelt Nix would definitely be a guy that would get a game ball. The other person would be Mike Mitchell. Mike Mitchell is laying hat, and he's playing a type of football that many Steeler fans thought he would play last year. The only thing I have to say, I know football is a violent game. You really want to lay people out. But isn't it kind of morbid watching him doing the humpy dance over guys when they're laid out after he hits them? I don't know if it's just me, but come on, man. You can't do the Harlem Shake, the nay-nay, when a guy's knocked out. I mean, come on, man. At least have a little class. But those two guys, I thought, really stood out. They really played a physical brand of football that the Pittsburgh Steelers are known for and fans want to see.
Well, you know, this brings up a debate that's been very, let me just say it this way. A lot of people have been talking about it this week, and it is whether or not these players, and there were two players in particular against the Raiders, one, and both of those players are the players you just gave game balls to that have been talked about the most. And these are players, Roosevelt Nix, who caused the fumble on I forget the player's name, but on the kick return. And then also Mike Mitchell, who caused the fumble on the hit on Latavius Murray. They both got up and celebrated when the ball was still in play and on the ground. And a lot of people are really up in arms about it. Mike Mitchell has defended himself and said, look, it's an emotional game. If you all want me to just sit and turn and go to the sidelines, then you have the wrong player because it's just not me. And Mike Tomlin was asked about it in the press conference on Tuesday, and they said, would you rather them know where the football is or what? And he said, yeah, I'd rather them know where the football is. Do you have a problem? Like you said you have a problem with them celebrating when a player is down. Did you see that? And did you think to yourself, okay, this is ridiculous with the celebration stuff. Get after the football. Like, what are your thoughts on this? What's your take?
They're being played to play football, not dance, do the Harlem Shake, shuffle, or do the Watusi. I understand it's an emotional game. The ball is on the ground. Play to the echo of the whistle. They've been doing this since they've been 7 years old. They've been told the same thing over and over and over again. Play to the echo of the whistle. If you do that, you can get the fumble, and then you can have a freaking dance party in the middle of the field like T.O. if you want. Finish the play. Do your job and finish the play. But the focus should be more on the plays that they made, not the aftermath. Those were two big hits in the game that helped the Steelers secure the victory, and hopefully that's not lost in their chicanery and histrionics.
No, I agree with you 100%. And the funny thing about Mike Mitchell, and that's what people forget, is a lot of people, you know, when they think of big hits, they think of Ryan Clark, because Ryan Clark delivered some monster hits when he was with the Steelers. Mike Mitchell's doing it clean this year. I don't believe he's been flagged for any type of personal foul for hitting a defenseless receiver or anything like that. You think about the Marvin Jones hit against Cincinnati, hit him right in the stomach with his shoulder. He hit on Murray. Same thing, very clean hit. These he's playing the right way. He's playing the way everyone wants him to play. They just don't like the celebration afterwards. Now, let me know. Here was my theory. I said this after our show, or after the game, our post-game show, the Steelers' final score that I do with Chris Carter. I said this, and I want to see what you think about this. I feel like the Steelers are mirroring their head coach. I like Mike Tomlin. I think he's a fiery guy. I think he's more honest than most NFL coaches are. I think that he is a player's coach, that they like to play for him. They want to win for him. They listen to him. I also think that he's very aggressive. I also think that he can be very arrogant at times. And I think that he loves the passion, the celebration of the game. I mean, you watch him on the sidelines. He's running around. He's going on the field. He's high-fiving. He's chest-bumping, all that stuff. Joey Porter's doing the same thing. They've got other coaches that are going berserk on the sidelines. Do you see that? I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I think people, when I say that, they might think, okay, Jeff doesn't like Tomlin or what. No, I do like Mike Tomlin. I like him a lot. Do you see the team kind of mirroring the head coach and the way that he handles them and the way that he handles certain situations, or am I off my rocker?
No, I think they do model the head coach, but not for what you're describing. Listeners, the name of this show is The Standard is the Standard. That's the famous Mike Tomlin mantra that he's trumpeted since he's been there. And the reason why the Steelers are 5-4 with the level of injury that they've had to deal with is because the players believe that mantra to their core. The standard is the standard. They feel like everybody has to play to a certain line and a certain level in order for them to win. And they truly believe the mantra, the standard is the standard, and it's the next man up. A lot of teams say it, but we see this team go out week in, week out, and demonstrate it. That's the only thing that should be important to fans and to the media when they talk about, you know, do they mirror the coach? That's what they mirror. It's an emotional game. It's a violent game. But the important thing is they continue to raise the bar even when they face adversity, and that's the thing you need the most if you're going to succeed and continue to stack wins in the National Football League, because injury is 100% certainty.
Yeah, and if you think about Mike Mitchell in particular, and since we're talking about this situation, I think it's a good time. It's very opportunistic to talk about him. He has a chip on his shoulder. He seems like an angry young man. And a lot of it, that angst is based towards the fans. And it's, I got to say, it's rightfully so. Mike Mitchell, last year in 2014, I think it's very clear now that he played injured. That groin injury obviously hindered his play, because you're seeing a dynamic Mike Mitchell this year. He already has 2 interceptions, big hits, great in run support. He's playing like the high-priced free agent that they thought they were going to get. But he plays angry. And, you know, the fans ripped him to shreds last year. The media ripped him to shreds last year, said it was a horrible free agent pickup, when in reality, he was hurt. So are you now on the Mike Mitchell bandwagon in terms of, you know, hey, the guy was hurt last year? It's obvious, because look how he's playing this year. Or do you think that he's just having a good year?
I think he's just having a good year. I mean, but let's keep it in perspective. Let's keep it in perspective. The team is 5-4, and we've seen that secondary give it up. And they gave it up in the Raider game. So I'm not trumpeting Mike Mitchell. You know, I'm not playing opera. I'm trying to think of an opera song. You know, you guys could think of some opera stuff. You know, I'm not trumpeting Mike Miller. I'm not Miles Davising this guy or John Coltrane this guy. Take the A-train. But he's playing good football. He's definitely playing much better than he did last year. He's definitely the best player in that secondary. But it's still a secondary that's vulnerable and has given it up and gave it up in the game on Sunday to the 2-4 touchdown passes. Guys running down the seam uncovered and scoring in the game against the Oakland Raiders. But he is playing more to the guy that they thought that they were going to get last year.
Absolutely. Now, I think the biggest storyline coming out of the Raiders game, other than the victory, was the fact that the Steelers lost Ben Roethlisberger. I've always said that I think that Mike Tomlin's kind of blowing smoke when he said at his press conference that we're going to leave the door slightly ajar for Roethlisberger to play this week. I don't think there's any chance Ben Roethlisberger sees the field this week. This is going to be Landry Jones' start. And if Landry Jones, let's be honest, if Landry Jones can't have a full week to prepare, he has experience under his belt now as a starter. He's had several snaps in regular season play in 2015 as a reliever and as a starter. And he's playing at home against the Cleveland Browns. If you can't win this game, I think it's safe to say that pretty much you might not be a backup even at the NFL level. But do you agree that Ben Roethlisberger is probably not going to play this week? And also, do you trust Landry Jones a little bit more now than you did going into Kansas City?
Jeff, I'm going to be the starter on Sunday. Do you believe me if I told you that?
Sure, why not? Yes, no, I don't believe
you. Exactly. I have a better chance of starting on Sunday than Ben Roethlisberger. He's not playing on Sunday. The coaching staff is thinking the same thing you are. Probably not to that degree, but they're saying, we have a bye after the Cleveland game. Let's get a solid week of preparation. Let's put Landry Jones out there. We're at home. We think we have enough to beat the Cleveland Browns. Let's get Ben a week's rest, another week after the bye. Bring him back when they go on a murderous stretch. I think the stretch is, what, against Seattle, then it's Indianapolis, and what, Cincinnati, Denver, somewhere around that. They're going to try to get as much rest as possible for that stretch run. So we're going to see Landry Jones on Sunday.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. And speaking of looking ahead to the Cleveland Browns, which is something we're going to be doing here in a second, we have our Hall of Fame caller on the line, Vito from New Jersey. What's up, Vito?
Gentlemen, good evening. How are you?
Vito?
How are you,
gentlemen? Doing good, man. What's
cool.
going on?
I guess my biggest question is, this guy Boykin that they got from Philadelphia, where has he been? Is he just in hiding, or they never use him? Why aren't they putting him in there? This guy's supposed to be very good. I mean, is it a mystery, or am I...
As the Boykin turns.
I'm confused about it. Why aren't they using this guy? I mean, you got Mitchell in there. Why not give this guy a chance, too?
Go ahead, Lance.
Vito, do you think there are extraterrestrials in Area 51?
No.
That's the only way I can answer the Boykin question. I saw a UFO yesterday, a pink unicorn, and I saw a Sleestak yesterday as well. They're not playing either. I don't know why.
It's amazing, right?
Well, you know, the funny thing is that someone finally, and it was someone at that practice on a daily basis, it was actually Chris Adamski of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, finally gave a little bit of a glimmer or a picture of why Boykin might not be playing. And here's what he said. He said that the Pittsburgh Steelers coaching staff believes that William Gay is their best cornerback, and that if you haven't noticed this, when the opposition goes into three wide receiver sets, they move William Gay to the slot. And Antoine Blake goes to the outside. Ross Cockrell is filled in as well in that rotation. What his explanation was is that Boykin is not as good at on the outside as Antoine Blake, and William Gay is better than him in the slot. And so since they move William Gay to the slot, they're not going to keep Boykin on the bench, or they're not going to put Boykin in over Gay, and they like Blake out on the outside and three wide receiver sets. That was his explanation. That's the first even close to realistic explanation that I've read or heard or talked to anyone about in regards to Brandon Boykin. It does make sense, although I find it hard to believe that he is not at least the caliber of outside cornerback as Antoine Blake, considering Blake has not done well in coverage the past few weeks. But it's not a clear-cut answer for you, Vito. I'm sorry, but that's as close as I've heard, to be honest with you. I mean, we've heard this question a million times this year. A lot of people thought it was a 60% rule. I believe that even if he played every snap defensively for the rest of the year, it would not equate to 60%. Therefore, they would only owe the Eagles a fifth-round draft pick. So I don't think that's the reason anymore. It's just the latest reason, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Question is, will he be here next year then? We don't know.
Vito, I think you know the answer to that. Absolutely not. I have a better chance of taking a snap at corner next year than Boykin. He's gone. He's clearly out of here. And, you know, I don't worry so much about the compensation for Boykin, because you never know what that player is going to pan out. A lot of fans try to do the look into the crystal ball, look into the future, and try to believe that the pick that they may have surrendered was going to be a Hall of Famer. It might have been a guy that was a bust. I mean, look at the draft class this year, just as an example. So it's just, it's the evaluation process that I'm disturbed about. What did they see, or what did they do in terms of their due diligence when they evaluated the player that somehow his stock could drop so precipitously in such a short time? That tells me that they didn't necessarily do their adequate homework on Boykin the player. If 2 weeks later they go out and get a guy off the waiver wire in Cockrell and he gets all the snaps.
Right.
That's disturbing, you know, when I look at it.
Well, you know, here's something to think about, Lance, and I'll ask you this question. It has to do with Boykin. Boykin hasn't played this year, hardly at all. He's a special teams guy. That's plain and simple what he is. You have to wonder how that's going to impact his free agent price tag. You know, there might be teams that say, geez, the Pittsburgh Steelers secondary is no good, and he couldn't play for them. Do we really want this guy? And then you have Antoine Blake, who's going to be a free agent as well. William Gay's going to be a free agent. I think that Boykin could be an option for this team next year, depending on who they lose in free agency, who they're able to sign in free agency, and what the market's like for Boykin out there. If there aren't suitors calling for Brandon Boykin, and the Steelers lose someone like William Gay, I think they could make an aggressive play to keep Brandon Boykin, because he is an experienced player. Does he want to stay? Maybe not. I mean, why would you? You get traded to a team that doesn't want to play you anymore. But at the same time, I think it all depends. So I think the free agency could be interesting with their secondary, because you don't know if guys like Blake are going to be a commodity out there. No one really thought Bryce McCain was going to be, and he got that monster deal from Miami. What do you think about that, Lance? I think that's a very valid point on my behalf, if I may say so myself.
If you may say so yourself. The eye in the sky doesn't lie. Blake's tape is out there. And, you know, I'm not a football savant. I never coached the cornerback position. But the eye in the sky doesn't lie. And even from my untrained eye, Blake's not playing particularly well. I mean, just look at the separation that receivers get when they run digs on Blake. I mean, it's just really bad. I mean, Blake is an average player, but there's such a need for corners everywhere in the league because of the style of offenses, the spread offenses that people play, that Blake has had enough good tape in between the inconsistent tape and just right bad tape that he'll get a job. And the Steelers may be in a position where they have to bring him back because of the contract situation with their corners on their roster. The best thing that could happen for the Steelers would be, I think they re-sign Gay. I think they go out bringing a free agent. Maybe you bring Blake back and you develop Grant in the second-round draft pick, and then you move on from there. But you also sprinkle in a pass rusher to try to get the front seven even better.
Yeah, Vito, I know it's not the answer you're looking for, buddy, but it's good enough. It's got to be good enough tonight.
No, good enough. Another question I had for you guys, what about the mystery of thinking about D'Angelo Williams possibly not playing this weekend?
Yeah. Mm. Go ahead, Lance.
I think we have to wait. We have to wait. Be concerned if he doesn't practice tomorrow. I think that's when you should be concerned. Again, I think I asked you, Jeff, and I think you told me that Tomlin isn't so hard and fast like Cowher used to be if you did not practice on Friday. But just wait till tomorrow to see what his status is. If he doesn't play, I think that's huge in terms of how this game will play out on Sunday.
Well, also, I wouldn't even be shocked if he didn't practice tomorrow. I think that Friday is the day for D'Angelo Williams. He's a veteran. He knows the system. He's played well this entire year. He's up there in age in terms of running back standards. There's no need to have him practice on Thursday if you know an extra day of rest is going to make him feel better. You can even have him as limited on Friday, and he plays on Sunday. He can do that. He's not one of these guys, oh, like Isaiah Pede, who they just picked up, who found out he was a limited participant with a tweaked knee. He's not a Jordan Todman, who, although has been with the team since the end of the preseason, doesn't have the experience as D'Angelo Williams does at that level, being a starter. Todman has played with other teams a significant amount of time, but not with Pittsburgh. And so I don't think that the practice time is as necessary. It is a concern. I think that Tom will be really wise to say, I'm going to shut him down Wednesday and Thursday. He'll be limited or a full participant on Friday. He's going to play Sunday. They get into the bye week. You get him all healed up, and then you're all back ready to go for Seattle. But they have a lot of injuries on this team. And, you know, Vito, it's not just D'Angelo. It's James Harrison. He's out. He was out with a knee as well. Ryan Shazier was out with a knee inflammation. It's certainly going to be interesting to see the participation they're going to have, especially on the defensive side of the ball moving forward. So, Vito, before I let you go, what do you think about the game Sunday? What's your prediction?
I think Pittsburgh's going to pull it off. I think Cleveland is a team that's just, you know, they're hurting. I think they, you know, they really don't have anything to play for but pride. I mean, this season's kind of over. I mean, we don't know who we're going to get a quarterback from that team, but I think Pittsburgh's going to do enough to win. I mean, I think the offense is that good with Antonio Brown, and we have a great receiving core. And I think the one thing that Landry Jones has to remember is he doesn't have to do it all by himself. He has a team around him. You know, he's got playmakers all around him. I mean, now we brought in Jacoby Jones. He could also be inserted as a receiver if we needed to. But, you know, you have Martavis Bryant. You have Darius Heyward-Bey. You have one of the top receivers in Antonio Brown. You have Heat Miller, who's your clutch. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. To have those guys to throw the ball to, it's just tough for any secondary who's got to protect, because who do they block first? I mean, if you double-team Brown, now Martavis Bryant is open. If you double-team Brown and Martavis Bryant, then you got Heath Millen, maybe you got Heyward-Bey or whoever else is in there as a receiver. Marcus, you know, you never know. Every week a different person could shine. Maybe Marcus Wheaton has a great game this week. Anything's possible. So they have so many good playmakers on offense that we have enough to, you know, win just about every game. We really do, especially against a team like Cleveland, who I don't think is that good. And all Andrew Jones has to remember is be confident. You don't need to do it all by yourself. You have a team around you. Let them make the plays. Just like Ben threw it out there, made the you know, the right decisions, and look what these guys did on Sunday. It was incredible.
Amen, Vito. I hope you're right, buddy. Thanks for the phone call. We always appreciate it. Hall of Fame caller Vito from New Jersey. Let's back up the truck a little bit about the Cleveland Browns game, and let's talk a little bit about these injuries. I'm kind of concerned with a couple players. Williams is not one of them. Ryan Shazier is back on the injury report with an inflammation, swelling in his knee. James Harrison's on the injury report. Will Johnson with a back. This is a long injury list today for Wednesday's practice. Now, they are going into week 10. They have not had a bye week yet. There's a good chance that some of these injuries are going to be, you know, Tomlin's basically just trying to preserve these guys a little bit longer, and he's going to get them in there, and they're going to play on Sunday. But you do have to wonder about the health of the team moving forward. But also, it's important to also recognize on the other side of the football, the Cleveland Browns are dealing with some big injuries as well, not only with McCown at quarterback. Manziel is also on the injury report, although not as serious. McCown was a limited participant today, if you didn't see that, Lance. He did not participate in the 11-on-11 portion of practice. But also, their secondary, Joe Hayden and Dante Whitner, both were not practicing today. They both are going through the NFL's concussion protocol. And Hayden, this is his second concussion already this season, and we're only going into Week 10. I really find it hard to believe that he might play this week. What are your thoughts on the Steelers situation from an injury standpoint, as well as the Cleveland Browns injury standpoint?
I think, unfortunately, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Joe Hayden may not play. Joe Hayden hasn't been playing good football this year, and he was thoroughly disrespected by Bruce Arians and that offense in the Arizona Cardinals in the game where they just attacked him vertically on 9 routes. They just said, Joe, you can't run. So, and Antonio Brown has had a field day with Joe Hayden in his career, so it might be a good thing for Cleveland Brown fans that Joe Hayden doesn't play. You know, I'm going to take the Tomlin route. I'm not going to worry about injuries. They're just part of it. as long as that offensive line is there and it's healthy and they're playing and those wide receivers are out there, they're going to have some advantages in this game. I think the biggest injury would be to D'Angelo Williams if he didn't play, but if D'Angelo plays and the offense is intact, I think they'll be fine. They've been able to play without Ryan Shazier this year, and I'm just hoping for Ryan Shazier that he does play, that he starts to be able to physically deal with the grind week in and week out in the National Football League, because I think when he's on the field and he's particularly playing sharp in his assignments, he can be a game changer. But I'm not overly concerned with the injuries. But unfortunately for the Steelers, yes, Joe Hayden may not be playing. So, I mean, that's the biggest thing on the opposite side.
Well, Widner's a big loss, too, at safety. I mean, you got to remember that, too. If he doesn't play, I think that's going to really hurt them as well. But in terms of D'Angelo Williams, you know, something that Vito talked about, we talked about it ad nauseum on this show before, is when all the Steelers' weapons are on the field, who are you going to cover? And when you think you have everyone covered, the exact thing that happens is if you look at D'Angelo Williams' two receptions against the Oakland Raiders, is exactly what you get. Everyone was covered. They had Brown. They had Bryant. They had Wheaton. They had Miller. Who has D'Angelo Williams? Oh, crap, no one does. And he's getting these little dump-off passes and was running 20 yards untouched, ended up with 55 yards receiving on two receptions. That's what someone like D'Angelo Williams brings to the table, where he knows how to get out that safety valve type pass pattern. He has decent hands, even though he had that big drop against Kansas City. You don't know if Todman has that. You don't know if Pete has that, especially being so fresh into the system. So, yeah, D'Angelo Williams is certainly one to keep an eye on. So let's talk about this game from a defensive and an offensive perspective. As always, if you're a first-time listener, we give you three or four. Sometimes Lance goes on 5, 6, or 7. It's up to him. The defensive and offensive keys to the game. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first with the offensive? It doesn't matter.
I'll go first because I had sort of double duty, double the assignment this week, because we don't know who's going to play quarterback for the Browns. But I think the game plan is simple if Johnny Manziel starts. And by the way, if Johnny Manziel starts, they're going to blow the Browns out. Johnny Manziel is not a good player. Johnny Manziel cannot operate in the pocket. Johnny Manziel makes all plays outside of the pocket, typically outside of structure, rolling to his right. So if you're going to play against Johnny Manziel, you've got to stop the run, eliminate it completely, and put the game into Johnny Manziel's hands. You know, if you're playing Johnny Manziel, you put 8 in the box and you dare Johnny Manziel to beat you in the passing game, particularly from the pocket. You got to rush him intelligently. Do not rush past him. Your ends have to force him to stay within the pocket, and you have to force him to your left. If you're going to give him an escape route, push him left. Make him go his opposite of his strong hand to throw the football, because he's dangerous rolling right. So it's pretty simple if you play Johnny Manziel. I think that's a little more difficult with Josh McCown, because McCown can survey the entire field and deliver the ball in the pocket. He's pretty dangerous in the intermediate zones. So it's a little more difficult, definitely, with Josh McCown. But the first things first, whether it's McCown or it's Manziel, the first thing that the Steelers have to do in this ball game is stop the run. Last year, the Browns ran it 69 times for 349 yards for a 5.1 yards per carry average, and they averaged 175 yards on the ground. If that happens, this is going to be a very competitive game, and it could, in fact, be a game that they may lose. I think what will help the Steelers in the game is that the starting left guard is out, and they're going to be starting their rookie first-round draft pick, Cam Irving. And I've also seen, watching a few of their games, Alex Mack is not playing at the level that we're used to. And it's no shame to be dominated by Geno Atkins. It was just the way he was dominated. It was physical. It was speed. It was everything. Geno pretty much had his way and did anything he wanted against Alex Mack. I like the Steelers' ability to win in the trenches, but they've got to punish Irving in the running game because, you know, they're really successful running to the left, and the guy that he's placing, Bitonio, they ran it really well there, and they like to run behind Joe Thomas, so they're going to have to really attack that. The other key is they've got to stop Barnage. 42 catches, 602 yards, 14.3 yards per reception, 6 touchdown catches, which is 6th in the National Football League, and he's 10th in the NFL on first down catches from third down, or third down catches where they produce first downs. So you have to do a really good job against him. They've done a better job in the last few weeks against tight ends, specifically highlighted in the way they played against Tyler Eifert. And last but not least, they've got to get McCown off his spot by pressuring him in the face, and really pushing the pocket towards him. I think he has some difficulty when that happens, and he likes to try to get out the pocket where he's not as effective. This offensive line has given up 30 sacks, which is 31st in the National Football League. And again, I think the Steelers have to do a good job in attacking Irving, the rookie, and Mac in pass protection and breaking down the integrity of that offensive line.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was curious. I don't know if you saw the article that I wrote in regard to the snap totals for the Steelers. I don't know if you've had a chance to glance over those numbers yet, but the Steelers ran a lot of sub-package football, and they always do, but it seemed like more than usual against the Raiders, and it was so much so that Cam Hayward and Stephon Tua coming off a two-week break or hiatus with a knee injury, they played 100% of the snaps. They didn't rotate Cam Thomas, your boy. I know he's your favorite. He had zero snaps. He did not play one defensive snap against the Oakland Raiders. Daniel McCullers had 4, and Steve McClendon only had 12. Do you foresee the Steelers going more into their base 3-4 in this upcoming game against the Browns in attempts to try to stop the run? I think they were trying to get as many defensive backs on the field against the Raiders and Derek Carr. What are your thoughts on that type of approach?
I think they will. I don't think Cleveland has type of weapons that really threaten you in the passing game, so you might be able to play more base and be able to handle their running game that way. I think they really have to choke off this running game because you know what happens in the National Football League, Jeff. If a team has success doing something against you, the first thing they're going to do is see if you've got it fixed. And they're going to absolutely test to see if the Steelers have that running game fixed, particularly after the way Murray ran the football last week. They ran it pretty well. And if not for Mitchell's hit against Murray, maybe the Steelers lose that game because Murray had started to roll again. So they're going to test the Steelers' temperature in a running game. So if they can choke that off, they'll be fine. But there isn't really any vertical threats or guys that really particularly scare you in the passing game. So I definitely see more base defense being played, and I definitely see one of the safeties dropping down in the box and trying to be accountable in the running game and bring it in.
Yeah, I agree with that. Let me give you my offensive keys, and they're very simple. With Landry Jones at quarterback, and I'm not even going to do the whole double time if Ben Roethlisberger plays, because I don't think there's any chance that he does. Landry Jones, I think, is going to be the quarterback. I expect the offensive line to do a good job of keeping him upright as they did against Kansas City. I think with Landry Jones, utmost importance, number one thing, don't turn the football over. Now, yeah, the interceptions that he threw, or one of the interceptions he had against the Chiefs, was not necessarily his fault. Antonio Brown bobbles the ball, tries to catch it, pops up in the air, Barry intercepts it. The sack fumble he gave up, again, Villanueva gets beat by Tamba Ali, and he gets sack fumbled. Not really his fault. I believe that Landry Jones is going to make the safe play, but he has to protect the football. He has to have that awareness. He has to know when to just throw the football away and when to play another down, especially when you get down in field goal range. You cannot have those crucial sacks that move you out of field goal range, and that's on him. One other thing about Landry Jones that if you watch him play, even in relief, is that a lot of times he struggles getting the plays in on time. A lot of times you see that game clock getting down to 3, 2, and even 1 second before the ball snaps, and it's not because he's reviewing the defense, he's getting people lined up, it's because everything is late. Now, whether that's Todd Haley getting the play to him or whether it's him relaying the play to the offense, it needs to be cleaner. So clean up the game. Don't turn it over. Number two, they have to stay balanced with Landry Jones. And if you get into a pass-happy mode, and people might say, Jeff, you're insane. They're never going to get in a pass-happy mode with Landry Jones. You might forget that in big third downs, every time he's come in relief, they have thrown the ball. They're not afraid to throw the ball with Landry Jones. They need to stay balanced. I'm assuming that D'Angelo Williams is going to play. I think that the run blocking is improving it's not good because Cody Wallace isn't good, and Villanueva is better in run blocking than he is in pass blocking. I think they need to get the ground game going, and that'll open up everything else. And lastly, Martavis Bryant, wake up. That's all I got to say. Wake up. Antonio Brown is going to draw every defender in the world for the rest of the year after he almost had 300 yards receiving. Martavis Bryant needs to take advantage of his one-on-one matchup on the other side. And it doesn't get more obvious than the first play from scrimmage, he dropped the pass, and then the bomb down the sideline, which was right in the breadbasket, beautiful throw, and he literally bobbles it out of bounds. Martavis Bryant needs to step up his game. I think Tomlin challenged him publicly last week, saying he needs to be more physical. This week, it should just be, please show up. Don't whatever you were doing, and because of his suspension, it makes you wonder what he was doing. Just be there. And that's it. I think that's it. The Browns' defense doesn't scare me at all. It used to be an imposing – I mean, you know what I'm talking about. The Browns' defense – you can run on him. You can throw on him. Just don't turn the stupid ball over. Run the football well. And Martavis Bryant, please wake up and do something other than a really nice catch and run to score a touchdown. Lance, what the hell do you think about that?
I'm laughing at your slight dig. I wonder what he was doing given his suspension. Jeff, he was reading his game book and focusing on his assignments.
That's absolutely what he was
doing. While he was playing PlayStation with a bag of, or with a late night Jack in the Box munchie meal. I don't know if you guys have seen that commercial, the late night Jack in the Box munchie meal, specifically at 1 a.m. in the morning. But
exactly.
I think the one thing in your breakdown, I think that's key, is the turnovers. He can't turn over the football, and the reason why that's key is a Mike Pettine-type guy, he's a schemer. So you're going to see some looks, and they're going to really try to attack Landry Jones between the ears. And the best way for a young quarterback to deal with a blitz is by handing the ball off into the belly of D'Angelo Williams and being able to run the football. So Cleveland has to be more predictable in its coverages, because they have to choke down the run. So if the Steelers can run the football effectively, I think that'll go to a large part of them not turning the football over. But they got to get that running game flowing. They got to get the running game going. And it's going to be important that they get that going from the start and really make it a big thing that they emphasize in this game plan. Because 45 throws for Landry Jones is a loss. 45 throws, that's three interceptions, and that's possibly losing this football game. If they were to lose this game going into the bye being 5-5, that would be terrible. They go into the bye 6-4, get healthy for the stretch run. Let's go get it. 6 seed, 5 seed, here we go.
Yeah, I agree with you. If they lose this football game and people are already talking about it, they're talking about how it – under Mike Tomlin, they typically don't play well after a big win, and an emotional win like they had against the Raiders, that they typically don't play well the following week. There's only one way to silence those critics, and that's to go out there and just get the job done. And I hope that it's not an ugly win. I hope that Landry Jones proves that, look, I'm the backup. I can do this. I can handle this. I'm the modern-era Charlie Batch. If you need me to be that guy, that if Ben Roethlisberger goes down, you have trust in the guy behind him to get the job done. But you know, I hate to go back to it, but Martavis Bryant, I watched this guy play. I've watched every single snap of his career with the Steelers. I hope that he develops a little bit more consistency. As a fan, there's nothing I hate more than inconsistent players, and I hope his last game was an aberration, that he comes back. I think they're going to go to him early. They're going to take their shots, and hopefully he comes down with a couple passes because I think he needs it. You can just kind of read with his mannerisms, the way that he reacts after dropping some of those passes, very down on himself. And that's natural. I think that happens. But if you watch the great ones, like Antonio Brown, he's dropped passes this year too. And what did he do? He stands up, he taps himself on the chest and says, my bad. And he gets right back in the huddle until he wants the ball again. So let's hope that the coaching staff and Martavis Bryant turn things around here. But you mentioned going into the bye week. if they do lose this game and go 5-5, that might be the most deflating thing that could ever happen to this team. In my opinion, they need to sweep one of the AFC North opponents. And now the Browns are the only remaining team left that they can do that after they've lost already the Ravens and the Bengals. They need to sweep. I think they need to finish with a winning conference record. And I hope that they don't lose in the division again. But their conference record is horrible. And if they can win this game on Sunday, it's not only going to improve their division record, it's going to improve their conference record, but it's really going to put some distance between them. And hopefully, the New York Jets, as they play on Thursday night against the Buffalo Bills, people might say it's too early to talk about playoffs, to talk, yeah, cue the Jim Mora playoffs. Anyway, people might say that it's too early to talk about that. I disagree. I think that at this stage, you're halfway through the season. Pittsburgh's already played 9 football games. You do start looking at that. And for the Steelers, it's not looking like the division is going to be in the cards this year, and that's fine. I don't think after, you know, Cincinnati was 6-0, or especially after they beat Pittsburgh at Heinz Field, that anyone thought that it was going to be Pittsburgh's division for back-to-back years. However, if they can get that 5th seed, that's important to me. I think it's very important, because if you get that 5th seed, you're going to be playing whatever team comes out of the AFC South. Now, Andrew Luck just lacerated one of his internal organs. I think it might have been his kidney. And he has a muscular tear in his abdominal wall. He's out 2 to 6 weeks. He very well might miss the game coming up at Heinz Field in week 13. You wonder if there's another one of those crap teams in the AFC South that's going to come out. You want to play that team. You'll go on the road to play the Colts, the Texans, the Jaguars, or the Titans. If you're the 6th seed, you're going to probably be playing the Denver Broncos in Denver. And even though Peyton Manning fades in the playoffs, doesn't do well in the postseason, who would you rather play, right? You would rather play the AFC South. That number 5 seed is important to me. Do you agree with that, or do you think it's all too early to talk about this stuff?
It's just such premature to talk about it. There's a lot of football to go, a lot of injuries. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, we still don't know the true severity of his injury and how long it might take for him to come back. So it's a touch premature, but I like where you're going and what you're talking, what you're saying. I mean, the South is terrible. I mean, Jacksonville, Tennessee, you know, lacerated kidney guy in the Colts. I mean, it's a terrible division. You take playing those teams any day of the week as opposed to going to Denver and playing against that defense, which makes Denver especially tough. But it is a little premature. Ben Roethlisberger is the biggest question. If he doesn't come back for 5-6 weeks, who knows how long it's going to take. I think they're estimating 1 to 2 weeks. Then playoff conversation is moot anyway if he doesn't come back and play really good football. So, but I get what you're saying.
Well, I'll say this. I was really happy to hear that he was even a possibility to play this week. And I listened to his interview with Cook and Pony on 93.7 The Fan, and he said that, you know, he woke up on Monday and it felt a lot better. He wasn't expecting it to feel better. He was expecting a lot of pain. So it still hurts a little bit, but he's walking on it. He doesn't need crutches or anything like that. To me, that tells me he's going to be good to go for Seattle. I think that after the bye, you know, he's not going to play this week. He's going to have the bye week to rest, get it right, and then against Seattle, hopefully, it's not an issue. Now, you talked earlier in the show about what they have coming up after the bye, and we're not overlooking the Browns. We're just talking about what's ahead afterwards. So they go to Seattle, then they come back home to play the Colts, probably without Andrew Luck, so maybe Matt Hasselbeck. Then they go to Cincinnati, home against Denver, and then back-to-back road games to finish out the year at Baltimore and at Cleveland. So what used to be a murder, those next 4 games after the bye, Seattle, Indianapolis, Cincinnati, and Denver, they're going to be huge games, especially those last 3 of the 4, the Colts, Bengals, and Broncos, as they're all AFC opponents. Now, let's get back to the Cleveland Browns. The spread on this game currently is 4.5. That is certainly that spread has Landry Jones' stench all over it. Because if Ben Roethlisberger is the quarterback, there's no chance in hell that the Steelers aren't going to be favored more than they would be favored a lot more than 4.5. So, you got to go to that's a bad thing.
No, I'm fine. I'm back. Right. No, you know who that was? You know who that was?
Frenchie Fuqua?
That was Mike Tomlin calling. He was inquiring to see if I was available to play quarterback on Sunday. Unfortunately, listen,
well,
I have to do a show. I'm going to call Mike back after we finish the show. I might be warming up the arm. I got a little Tiger Balm, a little Big Day, some Icy Hot. I'll be ready.
Hey, you know what I hear is really good? And it has a really prominent former player, probably going to be in the Hall of Fame, probably should be in prison. He's an endorsement. That deer antler spray, I hear that's great stuff. You should definitely look into that.
Probably should be in prison.
All right. So, anyways, what I was saying before your bat phone rang is the Steelers are 4.5-point favorites. It's a Landry Jones spread. It's the Ben Roethlisberger's at quarterback. The spread is much higher. I think it's over a touchdown. Let me hear what your prediction is for this upcoming game and a score, for this game on this Sunday, Week 10. Cleveland Browns at Heinz Field.
This is a game that the Steelers should win. And this is a game that I think the Steelers will win. As long as the Steelers play a clean football game, fairly penalty-free, and do not turn over the football or make mistakes in special teams by getting Gabriel a return or something like that, they win pretty comfortably. If D'Angelo Williams plays like we all suspect, I like the Steelers to win this game 31-17. I like the Steelers to win in a rout. If Johnny Manziel plays, it might even be worse than that. If Josh McCown plays, 31-17. I like it somewhere around there. Where the first half is fairly competitive, Steelers get some turnovers, they start to get in the rhythm and the flow, and they break the game open. I think the Steelers will be going into the bye week 6-4, ready for the stretch run.
I, too, see the Steelers winning. I know, surprise, surprise. I think that the Steelers are a team that defensively... Yeah, exactly. I think the Steelers are a team defensively that they're really trying to focus on their P's and their Q's. I think they're going to struggle a little bit at times, even against the Browns. I think Duke Johnson out of the backfield poses a problem for the Steelers, especially if Shazier doesn't play. With his athleticism in the interior, I think that looking at this game, I'm going to say Steelers 30, Cleveland Browns 24. Okay, I'm going to say 30-24. It's going to be a little bit closer than you think. 30-24, they're going to win. It might be ugly at times, but who the heck cares? They're going to be 6-4, hopefully going into the bye week, and hopefully getting everyone healthy, including all the players that are on the injury report, and Ben Roethlisberger. Because if they can come back with Roethlisberger, the knee's getting better, if the foot's okay, and he's able to be mobile, and he stays healthy, this team can beat anyone, in my opinion. And I think the Steelers do just that against Cleveland. Let's bring in Chris Carter, our producer, as always, CC. Ready for your prediction?
You know what it is. You know that I got the Steelers winning. It's never a matter of if the Steelers are going to win. It's how they're going to win and by how much. Because the Steelers, especially this week, they're going up against an opponent that is on this super struggle bus. Like, this is the Cleveland Browns. They're like the guy that's been going to work for 30 years. He's always been late. Somehow he keep a job, but he just can't. He nobody likes him. Everyone knows he's a loser. He's one of those guys that lines up for Star Trek, before everything. Because the Cleveland Browns, they don't know what they want to do. I hear them, now they're talking about trying to trade for Matt Stafford, a guy that's going to cost them $22 million a year and isn't like a proven Super Bowl quarterback. Like, I'd understand doing that for, if they could get Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or something like that. But this team is in such a disarray. The Steelers have to dismantle them. And not just dismantle them just like, oh, I just feel like they – I just want them to. But, no, I think that this would be a statement game for Landry Jones and moving forward with his career if he can put up or just lead them to several scores in this game. I like the 31-17 prediction because I also do think that they have decent weapons. I do think that there's going to be some offensive plays, especially if Josh McCown plays. If Manziel plays, they're going to need – It's going to be very much like what the Steelers did to the Niners. It's going to be a route, and Kaepernick was lucky to get two long passes, but that was about it. And I think it's going to be the same deal with Manziel if he plays. McCown can – he can, like, Alex Smith you. Like, he has the journeyman skill to read defenses, to adjust to blitzes and everything. These are things that, you know, the Steelers are going to have to account for with him. But with Manziel, it's going to be like Lance said, he loves to roll out. He loves to try and just get outside the pocket and use that to his advantage. The Steelers are very good this year at taking that away, which is something they weren't good before. I think that as far as the pass rush, we're going to see a lot better situation for us because the Browns' offensive line is not what it's supposed to be with Alex Mack and Joe Thomas. I just don't see our pass rushers having that much of a problem with the way that we've seen our offense work. And I've seen I think our offensive line is going to be very dominant in this game. So I see 31-17 is a fair one for me, but I'm really hoping for like a sort of like a 35-3 destruction of the Browns. And not even like Landry Jones being immaculate and all that, just like sort of like manage the game, and they're able to accomplish. They're able to get done just enough around him to just get down the field, get in the end zone, and finish off drive. So I don't see this game being a big problem for the Steelers. Actually, it's funny, Lance, when you were talking about Johnny Manziel and rolling out, that's exactly what I'm working on for the film room segment right now as far as previewing the Browns. Is if we're going up against him, this is what we got to look for, this is what we got to take away, and this is when he's the most successful. Outside of Duke Johnson, Travis Benjamin's a really fast receiver. He's someone that we should look out for because if he gets his hands on the ball and he's in open space, he can hurt you because he's pretty quick. And once he gets off the ball, he's very good after the catch. But the key thing that when people have success against him, it's when they deny him the ball or they get in the face of the quarterback. So I don't see this being too much of a problem. Steelers bring lots of heat. I think Fudge creates two sacks in this game. It's going to be a happy day for Steelers fans, and we're going to be smiling for going to the bye week.
I don't think there's any chance that Johnny Manziel plays. Luke McCown whatever McCown's playing, who the hell knows which one it is. One of them's on that commercial for a cell phone company. But I don't think there's any way that Manziel plays. If McCown was even limited today, I think that he's going to be playing. So in your film room, you might want to do another one on McCown, too.
Gotcha.
Manziel is he's not good. I watched the majority of the second half against the Cincinnati Bengals. He's not good. I'm glad that the Browns wasted a first-round draft pick on him. But
in one of your first shows that you ever did with Neil was in the preseason last year. And when we were talking about Johnny Manziel, people asked about him, like, how good is he? Because the Steelers had to go up against the Browns in week one. And Neil said, I just watched Johnny Manziel get run down by Ryan Clark. And this is old Ryan Clark. He's like, Ryan Clark ran him down in open space. Johnny Manziel is not a problem. And he has not been since he's been in the league. I don't think he's that much of a problem. I've been skeptical about the whole Josh McCown possibly starting thing because the Cleveland Browns are such a question mark and you never know what you're gonna get.
I think I was doing a show when Neil said that. And the only other player I've been more down on than Johnny Manziel was probably Dre Archer. I would love to run that back, and we didn't mention it, but Dre Archer is no longer a Pittsburgh Steeler. I think Neil and I went to town on Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel is just not a very good football player. He does a couple of things well, like rolling to his right. He can deliver the football going to his right. He does that well. Intermediate stuff, he does well. But you force him to sit in the pocket and have to make plays, he's lost out there. I know Sam Lasher, I was hoping that the Cleveland Browns started him because I was guaranteeing a win. Like, if he starts, that's an absolute win, game one last year. But, you know, I agree with you guys. I think the Steelers will get this win. But they got to run the football, not turn the football over, and try to get in the face of Josh McCown. I think they'll do that and get in the bye 6-4.
Well, Lance, real quick, before we break and call it a night, what are your thoughts on Dree Archer? Because we didn't bring that up. I didn't have that on my rundown. I'd be honest with you, I totally forgot about it.
That's why.
That shows what an impact Dree Archer had. Yeah. What are your thoughts on the Dree Archer release? Obviously, he's not practice squad eligible, as having a whole year under his belt. He's been asked by a couple teams to come and try out, and he hasn't gone. What are your thoughts, Lance, on him, and also bringing in Jacoby Jones to fill a spot?
The Pittsburgh secondary currently has, as the Boykin turns, William Kay, Antoine Blake, Cockrell, Mike Mitchell, Shamarco, I will never start ever, Golden, and Will Allen. No disrespect to those guys. That's not a great list. That's not a great secondary by any means. I'm not trying to suggest the third round pick that they may have selected instead of Dree Archer was going to become Revis Island. But there was a need for a corner at that time. Corner, defensive lineman, or an offensive lineman. Currently, we still have a second-round draft pick in a Mike Adams that we presume is practicing and may be on the roster at some point. Do you think they could use some extra depth on the offensive line? You know, maybe they find a player that's better than Cody Wallace. You know, maybe they find a corner that's better than Antoine Blake. It just wasn't a position of need at all. It was a reach. It was a stretch. And it was a guy that didn't even have major production at the low level of football that he played on. I thought it was an absolutely terrible pick, but they've had some great picks in that span of time as well. Martavis Bryant, Kelvin Beachum, just two picks of lower round guys that panned out and played incredible football. They just happened to miss woefully on Dree Archer.
What about ECC?
You know what the first thing I thought when I saw Dree Archer go, I was like, man, he was really fast and Madden. But otherwise, it is like the biggest failure. Not the biggest failure for him. It's just a disappointment because you saw how quick this guy was. I remember his first preseason game against the Giants. He caught a pass,
yep.
and Edmund Nelson was like, goodbye, and he didn't even score, but he went like 60 yards. And you're like, okay, this guy could be the truth. You know, he could be like the ultimate sellback to try and get him out there and become like a DeAnthony Thomas, what he's a, or even like, you know, just like a Darren Sproles type of deal. But nothing. I mean, you remember last year Ben was getting real frustrated because he didn't understand the call. It just seemed like, man, it just sucks that he did not work out. There's a lot of questions right there, and especially usually the Steelers, and we know the Steelers. They usually give their third-round draft picks and like more time than just a season and a half, and not even a season and a half, to develop. But, I mean, literally, Dree Archer was a rookie last year, and he was a second-year player this year. He had, like, one decent preseason game, and, you know, he was the return man, and he wasn't doing anything great. I did think that some of it was on – maybe there might have been like a lack of blocking on quite a few plays, but he just wasn't the explosive run you out of the backfield and make you have to think about him kind of player that I think Todd Haley was hoping that he would get, because Todd Haley was known for that when he was with the Chiefs. He's the one that brought in Jamaal Charles, and Jamaal Charles ain't a big guy, but he's really fast and he can move. And I honestly think that that they were hoping that he would be maybe not Jamaal Charles, but something along those lines. To answer your question, Lance, about, you know, who could they have selected, they could have selected, for one example, Devontae Freeman, who's blowing it up for the Atlanta Falcons right now. He was a guy selected not too far off. Funny enough, Ross Cockrell was selected about like 10 picks after Dree Archer. I mean, there were like quite a few guys. I mean, we selected Martavis Bryant after that, but there were options out there. There was the Crockett Gilmore guy that's playing for the Ravens now. But at the same time, I'm not too mad at selecting, because it's like, you know, this guy had that much explosion, you know, that was worth a shot, and it didn't work out. Boo hoo. As far as getting Jacoby Jones, I believe the Steelers said, look, we just need a guy that's not Antonio Brown, that can catch the ball, not mess the game up for us. And he's experienced. He knows how to do it. Bring him in, and he'll be good for a season. So I wasn't all that mad about it outside of the prospect of me losing a 98-speed guy on Madden to destroy people with.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Madden stuff. Good Lord, Chris, come on. honestly, Dree Archer, I was shocked, because it was, to me, when a team does something like that in the middle of the season, it's blatantly saying we completely whiffed on this pick. And it wasn't like he was a sixth-round draft pick, like you guys said. This is a third-round draft pick. This is a sought-after prime-time pick. I mean, people don't give up third-round draft picks very often unless they're getting some major compensation in return. And when you release a guy like that, you're basically like, you know what? We're washing our hands of this. That was our bad. You know, they're pulling an Antonio Brown. They're patting themselves on the chest saying, that's my bad. But you gotta question some of that stuff. I mean, a third-round draft pick, that sucks. But still, hey, if the team is better, my original issue with the draft pick wasn't that it was a third-round pick. It was that they were thinking this guy was going to be a kick returner. Kick returners are becoming extinct in the National Football League. So why would you draft one in 2014? They're phasing that play out of the game. And you could get someone like Marcus Wheaton, who finished out 2014 as a kick returner. Right now, Jordan Todman could return kicks. And they could all do the same job that Dree Archer was doing. So that's a good little discussion to have to finish out the show. Thanks, guys, for bringing that up. Lance, I totally forgot about Dree Archer, which speaks volumes. So if you're listening to the show live, we thank you for listening. If you called in, Vito, as always, we appreciate it. If you listen podcast form, make sure you check us out. We're going to take a week off. I'm going to call right now. We're going to take a week off next week. We're going to enjoy the bye week just like the players are. And we'll see you back here in 2 weeks as we get ready for the Seattle Seahawks. But don't forget to check out myself and Chris Carter after the Steelers-Browns game this Sunday on the Steelers' final score here on our Blog Talk radio channel. We hope you'll tune in, chime in. But make sure you check behindthesteelcurtain.com early and often every day for all your Pittsburgh Steelers needs. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.